This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK7. And by TrekFan. It's not just a fan club, it's an adventure. You'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Don't miss out. Help us move toward that Star Trek future by visiting TrekFan.org. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit Trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me today, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you doing this week?
Man, Chris, you know, I'm doing fantastic. I'm singing a song in my head, you know. I feel like I'm just, you know, fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, it looks like you've been running Bashir 62, the holodeck program there.
I have. It's been great. You know, Vic is just fantastic. And having him play a set in my room, you know, when I'm just hanging out, I want to read. You know, it's great. I get a scotch or something, and I just sit there and listen. And he's so nice, too. He comes over, he gives me relationship advice, which, let's be honest, I really need. Yeah, what better friend could you have than a hologram from the 60s?
Now, sometimes when you've had a bad day at work, maybe your boss has really ticked you off, things that really aren't going well, do you come in and do you say, Vic, play the song? Play the song! Play the song!
You know, I did do that once. I just really needed to hear The Way You Look Tonight. I pounded on the table pretty hard. I broke the little lamp that was there. Vic was not happy. Luckily, the computer just fixed that like that, so it was okay. But he told me not to do that again, or he'd never play the song.
Right. Well, Matthew, I mean, you can tell me if you want. You can tell the listeners here that you've only done that once, but that's not what Vic told me. Vic told me it's not the first time you've torn up the joint.
I thought he was supposed to keep that secret. It was supposed to be our thing, you know. I thought, you know, it's fine. You know, you tear up a holosuite, I just immediately tell the computer to put it back together. It's not like I can't fix it.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's sensitive. He's a sensitive soul.
That's true.
Well, today we're going to talk about Vic. He's the focus of our show today. We've talked about Vic a little bit in the past when we've talked about just kind of our favorite characters, kind of a quick overview. But today we're going to focus on him. And Vic made his first appearance in the sixth season episode, His Way. I personally loved when this came on, but what did you think about it, Matthew? What was your first impression? You're watching Deep Space Nine, and suddenly you're in a 1962 jazz club.
Well, Chris, you know, for me, it was an immediate love affair. I loved the guy playing him. So I immediately had to go find out, you know, does this guy have an album? I love his voice. I love this kind of music. You know, my grandfather and my whole mom's side of his family is from Sicily. So I'm Italian, at least half Italian. And I really grew up loving this kind of music because my grandfather would have it on kind of blaring in the backyard. And I just really... It's timeless. And so, you know, they put this on Deep Space Nine, and for some reason having all these songs in the 24th century just fit beautifully. And I just loved this character from the moment they said go because of the way they were doing a hologram. You know, he was smart, he was funny, he knew exactly who he was. He knew exactly who you were. He knew exactly where he was in time and space. And it gave him a whole new life immediately. I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. And Vic is very fond of telling the crew that these songs are 400 years old. He says that quite often, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And it works. You know, immediately you buy that this, you know, because you would kind of expect a character from the 60s to be a little bit of a smartass. And Vic kind of has that mentality in it. So it really works for him to know exactly who he is, that he's a hologram. He's a light bulb, as he says. And he doesn't really necessarily exist. And yet he does at the same time. It just works.
So you said that when you first saw it, you went out to find out if Darren had an album. Did you buy? They have one. This one's From the Heart, which has all the songs from Deep Space Nine on it. Did you buy that album?
I did. I have that one. I have his other album as well. They're both fantastic. In fact, if you don't have From the Heart, you need to get this album. It has all of those classic songs done so well. It's just really, really good. You will not, I mean, it's one you can just put on repeat. You can put it in the background whenever you're doing something. So yeah, I'm selling Darren's albums here. I don't know him. I'm not getting any commission. Just go buy it.
Yeah, I've had it for about 9 or 10 years, I guess it is now. I've had it for a long time, and I still listen to it all the time. It's a really, really great album. So I think I've mentioned on the show here before, most listeners know of our various shows that I am a musician and was classically trained and played professionally and all. And I used to play jazz as well, and I used to play a lot of this type of music. And you know, we would play, of course, sets for concerts, but we would also play dances and, you know, you just pull the music out of the folder and you just play whatever you want on the fly. So I was really excited when this element came into Deep Space Nine. And I wanted to ask you, we both love it, but let's try to step back and think of it as just average Star Trek fans' reception as well as the writers and the producers, their view of it. Do you think this was a creative risk, introducing something like this to Star Trek beyond one episode? I mean, of course, we've had like in 1001, I guess is the name of the TNG episode with the Bynars, and we had Minuet, and we had Riker going in, you know, and playing Bone in the club. But beyond that, it's been like a one-off thing. But here we were introducing someone who's actually going to be another of the many, many supporting characters on the show. And we were going to revisit this club over and over and over. And so you think of someone just tuning into Star Trek and they're at a jazz club and, you know, people are in tuxedos and smoky bar. What do you think? It was a creative risk?
You know, it was in some ways, but you know, Voyager had kind of like set the stage that a ship or a crew would kind of have a place that they would go to. And they went through a few places, you know, they went through Sandrine's, they went through Neelix's beach program with its crazy bathing suits, Fairhaven, Tristan's favorite. And so, you know, they went through a lot of these iterations, but Deep Space Nine never really had this. You know, you would go to Quark's and Bashir and O'Brien would play the Battle of Britain or the Alamo, or, you know, they'd be doing one of those, but you never really spent any time there. To add this in, though, I don't know how much of a creative risk it was, because we'd kind of already seen this on Voyager before, where they would go to a place. But to say we're going to add a new character that you're actually going to care about in the sixth season like this, and we're going to give him an important role in, you know, helping, say, Odo and Kira to get together, or giving advice to the crew as if he's a counselor. I think maybe that's a risk, but again, Voyager's already broken that ground with a holographic doctor. But honestly, I'd rather hang around Vic than the holographic doctor any day. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I still remember, I believe it's on the extras of one of the DS9 DVD sets, but they were talking to Ira, I believe it was. And he made the comment that when they introduced Vic and when they introduced the jazz lounge, and the studio didn't say anything, at that point, they knew that they could do whatever the hell they wanted to on the show. That's pretty much his quote. Whatever the hell we wanted to do. And they weren't going to say anything. And of course, it's that creative freedom that makes DS9 so good, I think. The studio was just kind of hands-off. It feels like with DS9, certainly compared to Voyager or Enterprise, because those were both network shows, and so the network was more concerned about what was happening on the screen. And of course, the studio was really caught up at the end of The Next Generation and in Generations film and then the other TNG films and in Voyager. And so it really feels like they just kind of let DS9 go and just let them do whatever. And so we got these brilliantly creative concepts that came on. And I love the scenes where you see DS9 from the outside. You see the station in space, but you have these jazz standards playing. It's just such a really... there's like this great disconnect that creatively for me works really, really well. And I also think, I mean, you talk about some of the places that they had, like Sandrine's on Voyager. Sandrine's, it kind of fit Paris's character, but when the other characters would go there, they all felt out of place, right? Most all of these settings on Voyager fit one of the characters, but the others were kind of like fish out of water, which is fine. I mean, these are 24th century people and they're going into these kind of imaginary settings. But in this case, I felt like Vic's Lounge and the jazz fit all of our characters, with the exception of Odo and Kira, pretty well. You know, it fit Sisko fantastically. It fit Bashir and O'Brien fantastically. And even Odo, when he starts getting in, you know, to playing the piano, and he kind of gets into that world too. And then, of course, Nog really gets into it, and it's only a paper moon. He loves the, you know, crunching the numbers and running the joint. It just felt like a really, really good fit for our crew.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I really liked about it is that the music itself feels timeless. It really does. And so when you see the music playing and the stations there, for me, it doesn't seem like a disconnect that those two things go together, because that music and what it's saying and the emotion that goes along with it is something I think that will last forever. You know, you're nobody until somebody loves you, or, you know, the way you look tonight, fly me to the moon. All of these songs, they express what, you know, I think humanity has just felt for the longest time, and they do it in a way that the music itself kind of transcends time. In the same way that you picture Neverland being kind of timeless as well. You go there and it's kind of set in that, you know, 18th century, you know, with the pirates and the cowboys and the Indians and all that kind of stuff. For some reason, that feels timeless, even though it's set specifically in a time.
You talk about how the songs fit the crew, and I love when Jadzia and Worf decide to have a baby, and Quark and Jules go to the lounge, and Vic sings "Here's to the Losers" to them. It's like the perfect theme.
Right, exactly.
It's how they feel.
it just works. And so adding that to the station is something that I think is beautiful. And, you know, it's funny, when we were talking to Una, and we were talking about how Garak really isn't on a lot of the episodes, as many as you think he is. Vic, to me, is the same way. I think of Vic being in more episodes than he's actually in.
Yeah.
And so, which, you know, as I'm rewatching, you know, especially as you get to season 6 and Vic comes on, and you in season 7, you want him to be on more often, which... You know, I don't know if that's for everybody. For me, as a big fan of Deep Space Nine, I always wish Vic was on more seasons than just 6 and 7.
I think if he had been on more seasons, that would have been good. I don't think you want him to appear too frequently. You know, like within a season, you don't want him to be in half the episodes of the season. Cause,
right, exactly.
You know, you have to use this character in just the right situations. But yeah, Vic was only actually on as Vic singing in the lounge 7 episodes, and there are 10 total, but he's only referenced in one, which is Chrysalis, and he's only referenced in Extreme Measures. And then in The Emperor's New Cloak, we get his mirror appearance, which we're going to touch on just briefly later on in the discussion today. So he's only there for 7 episodes, but it feels like he's there a lot more often than that. Well, let's jump into, you know, his first appearance in His Way is where he got to play Matchmaker. And it always, I think, when I think of him and I'm thinking of him as the Matchmaker, it always, the, you know, Fiddler on the Roof always pops into my head. Matchmaker, Matchmaker, because I performed that so many times when I used to play in the pit that it's burned into my brain. But anyway, Matchmaker, Matchmaker, that's Vic here. And, you know, to bring him in for that situation was perfect because Kira and Odo, they needed something to bring them together, and they just weren't finding it there in the 24th century setting.
It was kind of a hard thing for how Odo and Kira get together. We've been waiting for this to happen for the longest time. And so I find that fans either really love the way that Vic is a part of this and the way he kind of, you know, gerrymanders them getting together, and some people don't. But I think it works really well for these two characters. And what I really love, too, is that it really kind of shows the growth of Kira as a person. You know, in the first few seasons, she wouldn't have been caught dead in a holosuite. And then the kind of the way that Jen Zia has influenced her is to become more accepting of them, to the point where she could listen to Vic instead of just dismiss him immediately. And this is where the specialness of who Vic is really comes into play, that he can talk to her on a level where he can make her understand. You know, I thought that was really cool. And then, and of course, the way that he's able to see into people and bring out the best in them, you know, especially with Odo. It's such a beautiful scene when he's teaching him, you know, you don't have to know how to play the piano, just sell it, pretend like you know. You know, and then before you know it, you'll be thinking, you know, and it's I just love the way that Vic is able to have a part of one of the biggest parts of Deep Space Nine. And for me, His Way is just one of my favorite episodes of the series because it's just such a good time.
Yeah. And I like when he sets Odo up with those girls, right? They come in the quarters.
Yeah, exactly.
He sets them up. And like you said, you know, he's telling Odo, it doesn't matter if you know how to play the piano, just sell it, just do it. And then Odo doesn't want to go off with this girl who's, you know, basically told him what's going to happen later that night. And Vic tells him, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Odo's like, I have no idea. You practice, 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 get it? And Odo says, no. But Vic's like, if you want Kira, you got to go practice.
Well, and it's such a new sensation for Odo, that idea that, you know, I think he's so used to only doing the things that he is good at, you know, he's a law officer, all those things. He doesn't really venture outside himself. And one of the neatest things about the fact that Kira and Odo get together and with Vic's help is the fact that he really grows. Like he's pulling himself outside of himself and making himself do something he's not comfortable with. And it's fun character growth to see that in Odo. And it's really, you know, it really is the truth of that. If you find that kind of person, they're going to have a great effect on you. They're going to pull out of you something that makes you an even better version of you, you know, the best version of you. And I think Odo and Kira do that. And Vic is obviously able just to see immediately that these two are going to do that for each other. And, you know, as a good friend would, why wouldn't you want to help these people, you know, get over their retardedness and just get together finally.
Right. You notice when he transfers himself over to the holosuite where Kira is meditating.
Yes.
And you notice that Kira has no problem understanding his slang. You know, everyone else, Worf and Dax and Odo, they have trouble with the slang a little bit. But when he beams over to Kira, she has no problem. She just starts having a conversation with him.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Maybe it's that She's been to some programs that Dax has taken her to that have taken her to the 60s or something. That kind of...
Maybe.
You know, or it's just she's not... She gets the meaning of the slang without having it to have it explained to her for some reason, you know, like right. It just intrinsically yeah. comes to her what he's trying to say.
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like when he creates the holographic Kira and he says that, you know, luckily Bashir used her image in one of his programs, but it took me an hour to get rid of the Russian accent.
That was good. That was really good. It's a really well done scene. The fact that and two, did he record her some other place so that he could have her real voice? That's what I'm wondering.
Right. Well, I guess you could probably just sample her voice from the station's computer. I mean, if Google can sample
probably
Majel Roddenberry's voice to create voice for their phones, ultimately, you know, piece together the sound so that she could say anything. I'm sure they could figure out how to just, they've got voice records of Kira on the station there.
That's true. I mean, they're pretty, you know, I mean, it's a sophisticated station. So they, yeah, I think they're a little bit better than Google.
So he tricks them and he's kind of a well-intentioned, devious little light bulb.
He is. I love the fact that, you know, he does not tell Odo that he's going to have the real Kira show up on this date. He doesn't tell Kira that Odo thinks he's, you know, she's a hologram or anything. And so the whole time, you know, Odo's able to be himself because he's relaxed, because he's not worried about impressing the real Kira. He's just being himself and a kind of a version of himself that I think Kira really likes, this confident Odo, this one that has this suaveness to him that he hasn't had before. Of course, then they find out and they have this huge argument and they storm out, which, you know, leads to one of the best scenes in Deep Space Nine when they are walking after each other on the promenade a few days later and they're yelling at each other. And everybody's watching until they just start smooching on the promenade, which is awesome. And everybody just stops and stares. It's like that classic scene in any, you know, Western movie where the two are fighting on the street and then they finally start, you know, making out on the street and everybody's kind of clapping basically at the point when it finally happens.
You're talking about the two cowboys making out in the middle of a gunfight? Is that what you're talking about?
No, this is not Brokeback Mountain. No, I just meant, you know, yeah.
That was a great, yeah, I love that. And everyone stops. And then when Jadzia comes around and peeks, the look on Jadzia's face is like, well, you go Kira, right?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes, I think, because at that point, you knew Dax was all on their side. She was as excited as can be that finally Kira and Odo had gotten to this point, because she's known forever. You know, I mean, she's Dax. She can read people. I mean, I think she's known forever that Odo has been in love with Kira. And so I think there's that great sigh of relief. Finally. Hello.
Finally.
What have you been waiting for?
Finally. Well, another role that Vic played on the station is the role of counselor, most notably to Nog, and It's Only a Paper Moon. But before we get to that, what leads into the whole Nog situation, of course, is the episode, The Siege of AR-558. And Vic is only in that episode a little bit, but how much do you love the beginning of The Siege of AR-558, where Rom is auditioning for a gig and he sings The Lady is a Scamp?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, not only that, but Rom really can't sing. It's
right. That's what's so great about it.
It's so painful. He gets the words wrong. It's kind of cute, you know. You just kind of want to pat him on the head and be like, "Oh no, I'm sorry. We only accept good singers here."
But the camera angles too. The camera angles zooming down on him.
Exactly.
It's like, well, that's why the lady is a scamp. Vic's like, well, you know, first of all, the lady is a tramp, not a scamp.
Well, and it's so funny because, okay, so you're in this 24th century universe and you just feel like people don't get told no, you know, that I'm sorry, you're not good at that. You're not talented. Kind of like the whole baseball episode and where you're just like a face palming when, you know, no, you can't play baseball, Rom, because you're not good at baseball. It's okay for you not to be good at everything. In the same way, Vic has no problem being like, basically, no, this is not your thing. Keep your day job and don't come back auditioning.
Exactly. I love the beginning of that episode. And it's a great lighthearted moment for what turns out to be a very, very heavy episode and a very good episode. But it leads us into Nog's return to the station, and then he seeks refuge with Vic in the holosuite in It's Only a Paper Moon, which is a fantastic Star Trek episode. What did you think about Vic's counseling skills and his role as counselor to Nog here?
You know, this was something that I thought was really interesting, and it was Vic's ability to be able to see into people and what was really going on. And this is what I thought was really interesting. You know, Ezri is supposed to be the counselor, but it almost seems like in some ways counseling in the 24th century has lost this ability to really understand people.
Right.
You know, like to really get inside what's going on in their heads. And Vic is able to pick it up and read people immediately. You know, and he's not a Beta Zed. He's just a hologram. He's a light bulb. And so his advice is really fantastic, you know, to Nog, to allow Nog to be. I think, you know, everybody just wanted Nog to get better, but Vic really understands, you know, he needs to be able to feel what he's feeling so he can get it out. And right now, he can't feel what he's feeling because he doesn't know what he's feeling. And nobody's giving him time to be able to do that. And Vic was really sly at the same time of being able to then work into Nog this idea that he's still valuable. You know, he still has a purpose, that he's still needed, and really build that into him really organically, which I thought was really beautiful about the episode. Because I think, you know, the best therapists help you figure out your stuff by you figuring it out and telling them, not by them just telling you stuff. And 24th century counseling seems to be a lot of somebody telling me things instead of me figuring out things while I talk to them, you know? Yeah, I think he really, really works. It was really awesome. And it's a fantastic stinking episode.
Let me also ask you, because you're a big fan of Ezri, there's a little bit of a tag team between Ezri and Vic here to help out Nog. How do you feel about Ezri's approach? How do you feel about Vic working together with Ezri? You know, what did Vic do to kind of take Ezri's concerns, but give Nog that push that Ezri and Rom and Leeta all were unable to give him?
They want to give him that push, but I don't think that Ezri and Rom and Leeta necessarily really understand what Nog is going through. And for some reason, Vic is able to understand it. And he's also able to understand when to give Nog some space and when to really push Nog. Because obviously, he, at the end of the episode, you know, towards the end, he really pushes Nog out of the nest, saying, no, you can't stay here. And I can turn off my own program. And so you can't be here. And helping him to finally face reality. And all of those things working together. And again, it's interesting because there seems to be in this lost art of tough love,
right,
in the 24th century.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that, you know, you talk about how it feels like in the 24th century, no one is told no sometimes. And you brought up the baseball game. It feels like that a little bit, right? Like Rom and Leeta, for sure, as the parents, the father and the stepmother, and Ezri as the counselor, but a very, I think at this point, she's a counselor, but she's so uncertain about herself. I think it's hard for her to help other people at this point. they're not willing to actually do what needs to be done to push something that, you know, you sometimes have to do as parents. You sometimes have to put your foot down. You have to give that push. You have to cut something off because, you know, it's just necessary. You have to do it. And Vic is able to do it, whether it's because Rom isn't his son, because he's, you know, ultimately he's just another person. And so he feels like, well, I can just make that disconnect and I can cut it. Or it's this kind of 1960s sensibility. You think about, you know, how families were at that point in time and how parents were. And I think children were less coddled back in those days than they are now. Because of that, he's able to do it. But yeah, he finally just has to give Nog that push and really saves Nog from just spiraling and losing himself completely because of what happened to him. Well, another thing that I said we would bring up during the discussion today, and we're going to touch on only briefly because there's not really much to talk about here, but I did have to ask you about Mirror Vic, who is not a hologram, but yet lives in the 24th century.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the funniest, craziest things that they ever did. That was definitely where you knew the studio was letting him get away with anything, because nobody was paying attention. Right. But I mean, who cared if it made sense? It was hysterical. And then, of course, he doesn't live very long, so it doesn't really matter at all. It was just a really funny thing,
right,
to have Vic show up. And you're like, wait, why would he even be here? He's like, this doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter. It's funny. Right. Really funny.
Do you think it was sort of the writers? Because the DS9 writers are notoriously anti-technobabble and they shied away from, or maybe shied away isn't the right term to use, they just stayed away from a lot of the futuristic trappings that the other series have. So they just focused more on character stories. Do you think it's a little bit of just kind of making fun of it? Like, oh yeah, we know it's a mirror universe. We're not going to be too serious about this. Here's a hologram from the 1960s who exists over here as a real person. And he knows everybody.
Right. In more of like a 24th century way.
Yeah. Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Just go with it.
Yeah. I think that was one of those things where at that point they had taken the Mirror Universe from being, you know, really kind of the serious thing you got in like Mirror in the first couple of episodes of Deep Space Nine's Mirror Universe. And then they had just turned it into something where it's kind of a fun romp. We just kind of get to do whatever we want.
Right.
And yeah, I could, no problem with it.
Do you feel like by the end, by the time we get to the Emperor's New Cloak, do you feel like the Mirror Universe in DS9 had kind of jumped the shark?
Can you jump the shark in the Mirror Universe? I mean, I
think you can, but it's not a shark. It's a dolphin or something in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah,
You have to jump higher to get over the dolphin because the dolphin's already jumping on its own. So
no, you know, I didn't personally, and it's because I didn't at that point take the Mirror Universe super seriously. It was more just something really fun that I enjoyed watching the characters get the actors getting to play variations on a theme and really just digging their teeth into it, you know, sinking their teeth into it and going crazy with it. So I didn't care. I don't know. What about you, Chris?
I don't know. I just thought, I mean, when they get to the point of kidnapping the Grand Nagus so that they can get, it was a little funny. I didn't mind. I mean, it was fun. I liked the episodes just fine, but
yeah.
But the only reason I brought it up is just as you were talking about how they went from being more serious about the Mirror Universe to just having a fun romp later on in the series. I've never really thought about it very much that way. And so then it came into my mind like, well, did they jump the shark? I don't know. So, but it's fine at this point in DS9. The Mirror Universe has become fun. And maybe that set up an Enterprise, them just having fun in A Mirror Darkly.
Yeah, exactly. I think that In A Mirror Darkly took that idea of semi-serious, but also we're going to have just a goofy time. We're gonna really tell these characters big and bold and kind of brassy in a way that, you know, you kind of always wanted to be able to see them. Yeah, I appreciated that as well in that episode. I don't think you can really take the Mirror Universe seriously except for Mirror. Otherwise, it's too much. You know, you would be trying to hold too much. You could do it in the novels. They've done that really well, kind of really making it a more serious place. But I really enjoyed it when it was more fun, personally.
Well, in terms of the key appearances of Vic, we just talked about It's Only a Paper Moon. So let's wrap up with Bada Bing, Bada Bang. We've talked about this one on the show before. We actually did a whole Bada Bing, Bada Bang episode, so we don't have to go into it too much here. But just to round off, you know, how Vic became part of the crew in a very short time, how he impacted the lives of various crew members. You know, he brought Kira and Odo together. He consoled Quark and Jules when Jadzia and Worf decided to have a baby. He helped kind of console or at least give Worf an outlet for his anger and frustration after the death of Jadzia. He helped counsel Nog and bring him back. And so then when Vic himself gets in trouble, even though he's a hologram, even though they could have just turned off the program, the crew all comes together to help Vic when his livelihood is in danger.
I really like that the crew comes together like this. And I think that we talked about maybe a little bit when we did this episode, but I like that this whole thing brings the crew together for the last time, and that they all revolve around, it all revolves around Vic and his casino and his lounge. It's a beautiful, I think, representation of what that crew became, which is really beyond any of the crews. All of them together are family. And that's what really, I think, came across in that episode, that
yeah,
all of the characters of Deep Space Nine create this, you know, beautiful tapestry. They're all interlinked somehow. They all have a family. And so that the main crew members coming together to save a new friend of theirs, Vic, who's helped bring them together even more, it just really spoke volumes about what this show was going to be about. And we talked about, you know, that Michael Piller during the second season had really wanted this show to be about character stories. And this is really where you really get that. This is about these characters. And at this point, they're coming together to save something that they love, even if it's a hologram, because it's actually helped bind them closer together. And so it's really cool.
Yeah. And it was a great fun episode too, but it was just amazing how he impacted so many lives in such a short time. And as a character that could have just been a gimmick on the show, just another Holosuite character, but instead he really was like a real person. And so let's just close out with what Vic and the jazz element ultimately added to the show. And, you know, for me, when I think about What You Leave Behind, the scenes where they're gathered together in the lounge and The Way You Look Tonight and the flashback sequence, you know, sadly, the flashback does not have Jadzia in it because they couldn't secure the rights to use the footage, which still blows my mind. How do you have someone on the show for 6 years and the following year, you can't secure the rights to use the footage? That was unfortunate. But the whole scene itself, though, it summed up the whole series for me so beautifully. And just like you're talking about now, how everyone is such a family. And I'm generally not a big fan of those types of montages that are set to music, but somehow this one really worked because you really got to see how the characters grew from how they all came together in Emissary and all the experiences that they had over the years and through the war and the relationships. And it all really, really worked for me because they were together in that lounge with Vic singing The Way You Look Tonight. And if they had just done that montage with some other music, or if they had set it even to the same song, but they didn't have the lounge element, they didn't have the Vic element, and that hadn't been set up over the course of a full season, I don't know if it would have had the same emotional impact on me that it does.
Chris, I'm with you there. I think that the use of that song, it really does something for the scene in a way that you don't expect. And I think it creates an intimacy. One, because I think the song has so much meaning for just about anybody who hears it. It has some resonance to it that you that you're already bringing to it. It has a sentimentality that you're already bringing to it. So when it plays over that montage and you're watching these characters grow throughout the series, it adds that sentimentality in a way that's really helpful and beautiful and just gives you more. And so I think that that's the beauty of having Vic and something as timeless as jazz impact this series. And I think it speaks to when you're going to use something in, like, say, a show like Deep Space Nine or whatever that has some sort of reference in the past, it needs to be timeless enough for it to transcend. Because, you know, how many years have we've been watching Deep Space Nine now? Over 20, right?
Yeah.
And so this song, though, is what, 50 years old? I'm still seeing, you know, when I watch the end of this episode, I'm still not pulled out because I think, oh my goodness, this song's 50 years old. I just think, I still love this song, and I'm pretty sure people 300 years from now are going to love this song. So
yeah, and it fits Deep Space Nine so perfectly. That was the amazing thing, that if I told you the concept, we're going to have this jazz singer on, we're going to wrap up the show, we're going to wrap up the Dominion War, before everyone goes off for the very last task, we're going to play jazz music. We're going to play The Way You Look Tonight. You'd say, well, that sounds kind of weird. But then when you see it happen, it just fits the show so perfectly. So that is really wonderful. And just a couple of last points. I think Vic works so well also because of the casting. You know, casting James Darren was brilliant. Interestingly, they originally wanted Frank Sinatra Jr. to do the role, and he only wanted to play an alien, which is funny to me. It's kind of like when they had Mick Fleetwood on TNG, and he's just a giant fish. But so Frank Sinatra Jr. didn't want to do it. But James Darren, you know, he was a contemporary of Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin and those guys. He was friends with them. James Darren is actually the godfather of Nancy Sinatra's child, which is, you know, another connection to the Rat Pack. And I just think because they brought in James Darren, he actually lived all this stuff. You know, he's not just an actor. He is an actor. And, you know, he appeared with William Shatner and with DeForest Kelly and many other Star Trek actors over the years in movies. But he's not just an actor playing this lounge singer. He actually lived all of this. And so he's just James Darren on the screen. And the casting makes it work. And so it's just everything about this character. A lot of fans don't like Vic Fontaine, I know, but I just think it's brilliant. I love everything about Vic Fontaine. I love everything about the whole concept of bringing him on the show.
Chris, you know, I'm definitely with you. When they introduced Vic, I thought it was just kind of a brilliant move, and I immediately fell in love with him as a character. Part of it for me, obviously, is the music, but just something about kind of a wisecracking, smart-ass, you know, 60s Rat Packer seemed to fit with this this group on Deep Space Nine. And maybe it's because, you know, that kind of Rat Pack mentality is really the mentality of Deep Space Nine.
It is.
You know, yeah. They're unorthodox. They're a little bit too cool for school. You know, like, can't imagine Picard and Sisko hanging out, you know. Sisko's way too cool for Picard, you know. It fits with the vibe of Deep Space Nine. And it added a lot of fun as well into a couple of seasons that were pretty heavy. You know, you had the war going on and everything like that. Adding this lightheartedness and giving the characters a chance to be able to grow through something fun like this was really enjoyable to see. And I think you would agree with me. The fact that they make this work in some really key episodes for characters like Odo and Kira and Nog, even Worf, that's really awesome. I mean, just what a crazy out-of-the-box idea that, to me, I think it works perfectly. So I was always so glad that Jimmy Darren and, you know, Vic Fontaine came to Deep Space Nine.
Well, Matthew, it's been a lot of fun talking about Vic with you today, but you know, this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, so let's give everyone a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
DS9 Season 2.
I don't want characters to be driven by the plot of the show. I want the show to be driven by the plot of the character.
The Ready Room.
The Nth Degree.
And I feel like he paved the way for neurotic Starfleet character, so we got Hoshi in Enterprise. So I think we can thank Barclay for allowing us to accept neurotic characters in Starfleet.
Deck 8.
The State of STO.
I think they're going to see some Vidians in the game soon, so hide your organs, guys.
Hide your organs.
To the journey!
Tough love.
Janeway is really tough on Harry in this episode. She orders him to break up with his girlfriend.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I am legend.
It's really also doesn't. It also inexplicably, suddenly, in the middle of this thing that even in all of its versions, never had magic.
Warp 5.
The Suliban.
We could have learnt so much more about the Suliban as a race, but we also probably could have learnt more about the Suliban Cabal.
Trek News and Views.
Voyager Season 7.
This is the thing. I know the Doctor is created in the image of Zimmerman, and Zimmerman's bold and blah, blah, blah. But surely to God, if you was creating an alter ego of yourself, you would give yourself hair.
Literary Treks.
Fool's Gold.
One flaw in Kira's plan here, though, she comes in, she grabs Quark by the collar, and she yanks him, and she's screaming at him. We know from past history in DS9 that when Kira does this, all it does is turn Quark on.
That's true.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So everyone, check those shows out. We have new Star Trek talk for you every day. Some days we have two shows for you on different topics. So go check it out. You can get links to all the different places where you can find the shows by going over to trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Now, Matthew, let's tell everyone where to find us. If they'd like to send us a message, tell us what they think about Vic Fontaine, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can easily do that from any page on the website. Just look along the right side. You'll see a tab that says Send Voicemail. If you click that, a box will pop up, and you can use your webcam's microphone to record a message for us and upload it to us as an MP3 right there from the page. If you'd like to have a bigger discussion, you can visit our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the Orb. There's one for DS9. Join in the conversation over there. And on Facebook, you'll find us at facebook.com/trekfm. And you'll find us on Twitter, tweeting away about Star Trek all the time under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, if people want to look you up personally, where should they go?
You know, Chris, if you'd like to do that, I'm on Twitter, of course, which everybody should be. I mean, it's a great place to meet new people. MattRushing02, talking about all sorts of things. Obviously, if you've listened to this episode, you know some things about me. I love jazz music, the crooners. I like Deep Space Nine. So if any of those things you want to talk about, movies, books, any of that, just give me an at reply, a follow, and we'll have a great conversation, hopefully. I have my own website where I talk about book reviews, movies, all sorts of other things. It's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. You can find me there as well. And then, of course, we do Literary Treks, where we talk comics, books, and Star Trek. We've even talked Deep Space Nine comics, Chris. We've talked TNG comics. We've talked some amazing authors as well. So if you enjoy reading the literary universe and say maybe the Deep Space Nine relaunch, which we're slowly making our way through, great place to catch up with us there. Now, Chris, when you're not hanging out at Vic's Lounge with a, you know, sarsaparilla, where can we find you?
Well, I'm usually there, you know. If I'm not hanging out in that bar with the dosi drinking their wine, get my face painted like I was last week, I'm usually in Vic's, so, you know, playing the piano and playing the trombone and such. So that's where I am. You can find me. But now look me up on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that username. You can also find me on my personal website where I write about things other than Star Trek, just like you do, Matthew. And I share my musical interests and my photos and all kinds of stuff up there. That's at cbrianjones.com. And you can find me elsewhere on the network every week on The Ready Room, where we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series. Matthew, you're there with me often, as are other hosts from various Trekafilm shows and lots of guests from all around. And you'll find me with Kate Walsh on Warp 5 every week, where we talk about Enterprise, very much the same way we do here about Deep Space Nine. So check me out over there as well. And Matthew, before we let everyone go, we would like to ask everyone to please support our sponsors for this week's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important to allowing us to bring the Orb to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, a website, a portfolio, an online store, really anything you can imagine. I would love for you to go create your own space today. Try it free for 14 days. I promise you're going to love it. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial. There's no credit card required. And then when you sign up, use our offer code TREK7 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And if you choose the annual plan, you'll get a free custom domain registration as well. So go check that out. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Orb. And we thank you for supporting Squarespace. Also, please visit TrekFan.org. Now, I love to talk about Star Trek. Matthew, you love to talk about Star Trek. But if we just sit around and talk all the time, we're never going to get to that Star Trek future. And TrekFan is an amazing chance for you to come together with other fans to do more than just talk about Star Trek. You'll collaborate to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives, and you'll win great prizes along the way. You'll be turning your love for Star Trek into something that can help us all move toward that future we love. So support us and support TrekFan by visiting TrekFan.org. Solve that first puzzle to take your next step on your adventure. And lastly, if you would personally like to support the network and our programming, please visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 new alien-themed badges as a thank you for your contributions, and they're perfect for your shirt, for your bag, for your dress uniform. They even look great on a tuxedo if you're going to be dropping by to croon with Vic for the night. They're 44mm badges with original illustrations by Tobu Ishii, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. And we also have art prints for you now as well. Beautiful A6 size art prints of these aliens, and you can get those as well. Go to trek.fm/donate. There are different levels that you can choose, and your contributions help us cover the costs of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the Orb to you every week.
Well, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.